Welcome everyone to the Antinatalist Advocacy Podcast, where we speak to interesting and knowledgeable people about how best to protect sentient beings from the harms of coming into existence. I'm your host, John, an antinatalist advocate from the UK, and I'll be the main host of the podcast going forward. When Lawrence and I were planning the content that we wanted to put out into the world, both with this podcast and with last month's conference, I realised that I hadn't planned, at least for the first few episodes, to really explore each of our four cause areas at AA: human procreation, animal agriculture, wild animal suffering, and digital sentience. Therefore, I thought it would be good to get on someone who has deeply explored the reasons for not having children, and I reached out to Benedictine The Truth. Benedictine is a South African YouTuber and rapper. He's been uploading regular videos on heavy philosophical topics such as the meaning of life, religion, veganism, the right to die, and of course, antinatalism, for about 3 years now. I really do enjoy his long-form videos, where the heaviness of the subject matter is in part offset by the beautiful background scenery. It was a pleasure to speak with Benedictine, and I hope you enjoy our long and wide-ranging conversation. Just as a heads up, we did have a few tech issues with the recording, and despite our best efforts in cleaning it, the audio is still a bit choppy. But I hope you enjoy our conversation nonetheless. Also, as I'm editing this, I realised that I kept calling Benedictine Benedictine because for some reason, you know, I'd always read it that way in my head off YouTube, which I guess in this online world where we have a bit less face-to-face interaction, this is probably, you know, mispronouncing names is probably more common. Anyway, without further ado, I bring you episode 7 of the Antinatalist Advocacy Podcast with Benedictine The Truth. Enjoy. Welcome everyone to episode 7 of the Antinatalist Advocacy Podcast, and welcome to my guest, Benedictines. It's great to have you with us.
Now, it's great to be featured in one of your videos. I've always wanted to be featured in one of your videos, so now this is good.
Great. So when I first came across you a couple of years ago, you were Benedictines the Vegan, but you've recently changed to Benedictines the Truth on YouTube. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that change?
I felt like a lot of people thought that my channel was actually a vegan channel. Like I only cover vegan topics, but that's not the truth. I cover a variety of different topics. So I didn't want people to confuse my channel with a vegan channel. So that's why I changed it to Benedictine's The Truth. But I created a poll first because I wanted to know what people think. I created a poll, you know, ask for my viewers to choose between the two names, Benedictine the Vegan and Benedictine the Truth. And most people voted for Benedictine the Truth. That's why I changed my name to Benedictine the Truth.
Nice. And you were telling me before that you're planning on releasing some rap music potentially over the coming months. Do you want to tell us about that?
True. Yeah, I've been working on something. There's this other guy. He's an amazing producer. So yeah, I wanna make music that really stands for something, because I've been rapping for, you know, for many years, but I feel like I was not, you know, talking about things that, you know, like I feel like can change people's lives. You know, I was just bragging. You know how rappers do? You just brag, you know. But now I want to talk about something.
So like a shopping list of stuff that you've got. I find like a lot of rap music when I come across it. It's like I've got this and I've got that and I'm better than you. This one.
True. I don't know why we like to brag as rappers. I've always asked myself why we like to brag, but now it's better to just stand for something, because I feel like when you make a rap song, you can say a lot of things. It's not like when you're just singing, you know. With rap you can say a lot of things, so why don't you at least say something that can actually, you know, help people than to just brag?
Definitely. And there's a lot of rap music which does touch on, you know, really big issues, veganism, you know, social justice kind of issues. And there have been antinatalist rappers in the past as well, and lots of different antinatalist music and other art forms. So I'm really looking forward to yeah, seeing your work and seeing your contribution to all of that antinatalist art.
No, that's gonna happen soon. You know, I think it's good to like represent something bigger than yourself. Like we shouldn't let our ego get in the way of us, you know, standing for something bigger.
Yeah. No, that's really important. So yeah, it'd be great to have a bit of an introduction to yourself, like who you are, where you're from, and how you became interested in, you know, philosophy, debates, discussion, this kind of thing.
So my name is Benedictine. My real name is actually Sansa Benedictine Baloi. My YouTube name is Benedictine the Vegan, formerly known as Benedictine the Truth, formerly known as Benedictine the Vegan. I'm so used to calling myself Benedictine the Vegan, so sometimes I forget that I changed my name. But yeah, I live in South Africa in a small town called Malamlele. I became an antinatalist in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
Although I didn't know that, you know, there was like a term for what I was. Like I didn't know that there were people out there who think that it's actually like it's morally wrong to, you know, reproduce. So I just felt like I was the only one who felt that way until I started like Googling online if there were people who feel the same way that I feel, you know. But like I'll just type on Google what is or like a word for a person who doesn't want to have children for philosophical reasons, and that's when I came across the word antinatalism, and I started searching on YouTube, and yeah, I found lots of YouTubers talking about antinatalism. I was like, yo, this the community that I belong to. Like this is it, you know.
Yeah, and I'm coming from South Africa, obviously the world's most famous antinatalist is also a South African in David Benatar. So
I was surprised.
There's a bit of
a
legacy
actually
down there.
yeah, true. No, I was surprised when I heard that Benita is from South Africa, Cape Town. I actually felt proud, you know, because you never really think that South Africans can, you know, like think like that, because we don't have lots of philosophers in South Africa.
Well, speaking of South Africa, obviously a big part of your YouTube videos, like you're strolling kind of out there in nature. There's some quite beautiful scenery in your videos that, as I was saying before we started this recording, is kind of lacking in a lot of the AA content that maybe there was something that we should consider. So why did you start your YouTube channel, and why did you go for the content that you upload?
I actually started my YouTube channel back in 2011, and I was just uploading videos of me rapping. But then in 2018, I started to think a lot about philosophy. And I started to ask myself why we believe in the religions that we believe in, what's really going on in this world, how did we even come into existence, and I wanted to talk about these kind of topics. So I started uploading videos where I was talking about Christianity, but I didn't upload many videos in 2018 and 2019 until I discovered antinatalism. And that's when I realized that, yo, I gotta talk about this, you know, because I feel very strongly about the topic of antinatalism. You know, I'm very passionate about this topic because I feel like it is the final truth. It's, you know, when you feel so desperately that something is true, and you can see that other people do not see that it's the truth, so you feel like you always want to talk about it so that, you know, people will, you know, will at least understand you.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to that. I mean, when I first came across the topic of antinatalism, I remember it being referred to in a discussion on between David Benatar and Amanda Sukenik on the Exploring Antinatalism podcast. I remember they referred to it as the final, like, civil rights or social justice issue. And I remember it just dawned on me that, yeah, that's true. That the one way that you really can protect people from any wrong, any harm, any kind of suffering or hardship, the only guaranteed way you can do that is by not creating them in the first place.
And it does have that quality. Sorry.
And it's very obvious when you think about it. It's just that I think we've been, you know, conditioned to be biased towards existence since we were young. So we never like ask ourselves the deepest questions about life. You know, so I think that's why a lot of people don't understand antinatalism. Yeah. And you know, I've actually been asking myself what is the best way to actually like approach a person who doesn't know anything about antinatalism and start talking to them about antinatalism? Because if you're just gonna say, I think that having kids is wrong, you know that person, because of how they've been programmed, they will automatically think that you are evil, and they'll just create a wall between you and them to protect themselves. That's the thing. So I was actually trying to think, what is the best approach that a person can use to at least, you know, make someone who doesn't understand antinatalism actually understand it? Because it is true, but we've been conditioned to think the way that we do so much that it's hard for us to accept new ideas. That's the thing.
Yes. I can definitely relate to that. It's interesting because I was already quite interested in philosophy. I was already a vegan when I first came across antinatalism. And yet when I first heard David Benatar speak, I had these negative perceptions about the kind of person that he would be, that he'd be very angry, very depressed, very bitter, and, you know, kind of ruining everybody else's fun. If you know what I mean, he'd be the kind of person that people would be celebrating their birthday and he'd be like, this is all pointless and terrible. And I don't know why I had all these assumptions about him from that position, considering that I thought of myself as quite an open-minded person. But it does go to show you that there is a level of social conditioning against these kinds of views and the people that might hold them.
True. Yeah, people automatically assume that you're depressed. That's why you think the way you do. And I don't know, like, you know, that when I first, you know, came into the realization that no, actually, bringing people into this world isn't a good idea, I wasn't feeling well. I'm not going to lie. I was depressed. But now I'm not depressed. I'm actually doing better than I've ever, been. But I know that this is the truth, you know, and I'm very interested in the truth, no matter what it is. That's the thing. So, people will automatically think that you're just depressed and you'd want to, you know, always bring negative topics, you know, when you are hanging around people and all that. Like, no, it's not like that. But it's just that it's the truth. And I know that it is the truth. And I want people to wake up, to open their eyes. Let's have fun, you know, let's go out, let's try to enjoy our lives. It's not like we should just be depressed and be angry. Yes. No, let's try to enjoy our lives, but let's not forget the truth. Let's not forget what is going on. Let's not forget the injustices that are going on in this world.
Yeah, and it's really important to find that balance, as you said, by enjoying your, you know, trying to both enjoy your life while you're here, but also not bringing more people into it, not perpetuating the injustices or the harm. But you were mentioning about like bringing up topics around people before you got onto YouTube, and I guess even like after you started YouTube, have you always had lots of discussions with people about philosophy, ethical issues, this kind of thing?
The thing is, I like to challenge people. You know, I like challenging, you know, the beliefs that people have. I've always been like that. It started with like me questioning the existence of God. Like, okay, is there a God? And I would ask people, why do you believe that God exists? Why do you believe that the Bible is true? I mean, it was written by people. How do you know that these people, you know, were, you know, inspired by God? You know, like, they could have just, you know, wrote whatever they wanted to write just to control people, you know. So I would find myself debating with Christians. So I've always been like that. So even when it comes to the topic of veganism, I remember when I first became vegan, I loved talking about veganism.
Yeah. And how did that happen, by the way? How did you first become a vegan?
back in 2018, I was friends with this girl. She was a vegetarian. Me and this girl later dated. So yeah, mm-hmm. she was a vegetarian. And I thought that was interesting. I was like, you're a vegetarian, so you don't eat meat. She's like, no, I don't eat meat. And I think this is healthy. You know, like I feel healthier than I used to feel when I was eating meat. So I decided to do my research. I'm like, okay, is it healthy to be a vegetarian? And then I came across a video from, what's this guy's name? I always forget his name, but Golomfiansky, something like that. Yeah, his name is
Gary Yourofsky.
Gary, yeah, exactly. Yes. Yeah, I came across his video, and just one video of his, I was like, whoa, this guy is making a lot of sense. He was I think he was in I think they had a convention, like a vegan convention or something like that. I'm not really sure.
But was it the best speech you'll ever hear? Was it that video?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that
yeah,
video has converted so many people to going vegan. It's an amazing video.
I don't understand how a normal human that is capable of critical thinking cannot be persuaded by that video. It's not possible. You know, when you hear the truth, you can't. Even if you want to, let's just say you want to continue to consume animal product, but you still know that it is still wrong, you know? It's because it's the truth that, you know, we are really abusing these animals. And he spoke about veganism in a way that makes the most sense. You know, sometimes when you hear vegan, you know, talking about veganism, you might just think, okay, this person is just woke, you know what I mean, but they're not like yes. fully woke. But then that guy just spoke so much truth, man. I was persuaded. I knew right after watching that video that no, I'm going to be a vegan. But it took me a couple of months to become vegan, but I knew that I will become a vegan.
Yeah, I mean that sounds really similar to me as well, mate. Like I googled, because I knew that eating meat was bad for the environment, and in the West in particular, we eat so much meat. And I ate a lot, and I knew that it was bad for the environment. And, you know, I was at university and I was telling people that I cared about the environment, and I thought maybe I should stop being a hypocrite, you know. And I just googled why vegan, not vegetarian, and I came across a different video from Gary Yourofsky, and I thought, that's it, I have to go vegan. And again, it took me a couple of months, but I just knew there is no argument that justifies this. And I can either live as a hypocrite or I can do something about it, you know.
True. Now, if you are intellectually honest, you will always be interested in the truth. When you hear the truth, you just know that it is the truth. You won't lie to yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think most people are not honest with themselves. That's why, you know, they don't understand veganism. That's why they don't understand antinatalism.
Yeah, it can be tough. I remember just what we were talking about before. Like, there's a lot of societal kind of cultural, I don't know if indoctrination is too harsh a word, because it makes it sound like it's deliberate. But in many ways, I think conditioning is probably the best phrase. As I was saying, that social conditioning, it can make it difficult to go against what everyone else is doing and think for yourself and then act in that way. I guess it depends on your kind of background as well. I think it's quite easy for me, like in the community I was in the UK, it wasn't particularly like religious and conservative and conforming. Like when I meet antinatalists or vegans in parts of the world where, you know, they come from an extremely religious, very authoritarian community, and they go against it, I find it, you know, just so inspiring, because I was very fortunate that I didn't suffer at all, really, for the positions that I've taken. But speaking of antinatalism, should we touch on like how you became an antinatalist in the first place?
I became an antinatalist back in 2018. at the time, I was really, really feeling down. And, you know, I started to ask myself life's biggest question. I was really alone at the time. You know, when you're really alone, you don't really have friends. You don't, you're really that alone. You get time to think. So I was asking myself life's biggest questions, like, where do we come from? What happens after we die? Why are we here? And I started to ask myself, wait, why do we even bring people here? You know, because we don't really know what's going on. You know, because I don't have the answers, and I'm a person that likes to really think deeply about life, but I don't have the answers. I don't know what is going on. So why do I feel like I must be bringing more people here? But at the time, I didn't feel like other people shouldn't reproduce. I was just, you know, it was just a personal decision. Like, yeah, I'm not gonna be bringing people here. Plus, I've been through a lot already, and I don't know what's going on, so I'm not gonna reproduce. You know, it was not until 2021 that I actually became like a real internatalist, where I started to think, well, actually, it is actually wrong to bring anyone into this world. It is wrong for anyone to bring anyone into this world, because it's the things that are happening are not good. You know, like we're going through a lot as humans. We find ourselves having to work in order to survive. We have to pay in order to live in this world that we didn't even ask to be brought into. You know, lots of injustices going on. A lot of people that are really suffering, people living in poverty, people in prisons, you know. So it's like, no, actually, it's not best for anyone to have children. But but I was persuaded by other internatalists. And it's because I was kind of an internatalist, but not like other internatalists. Because you can just, you know, the way that I'll put it, I remember I had Russell Brand say this about veganism. He said that my morality is for me. So as a vegan, I don't really have a right to tell someone else to be vegan, you know. So that's kind of how I felt. So I was an internatalist, but I didn't feel like I must try to make other people see the world from my perspective. It was like, hey, my morality is for me, until I started watching, you know, videos from other internatalists, and I realized that no, actually, we must do the right thing. We must try to wake people up, you know. Besides, people were indoctrinated or conditioned to think the way that they do. It's not like they are really how they would have been if they weren't really indoctrinated. So it's important that we try to, you know, talk sense into people.
Yeah, I can really relate to that, because I had those thoughts as well before I became an antinatalist about, you know, whether or not I had enough. I knew enough to have children. I remember thinking, I am not mature enough. I'm not knowledgeable enough to have children. But if other people are, but now I just kind of think that nobody really knows, like nobody really knows what's going on. So all we can do is put out what we think are the best ideas in a kind of kind way and do the best with what we've got. But that ties into my antinatalism. I do still strongly believe that I don't, and I'm not sure that anyone does, have the, you know, it's such a huge thing to create somebody. And I think you've got to be so sure that you think it's the right thing to do. And when you first talk to people about antinatalism, or even just ask them why they had children, or if there are any ethical issues having children, it's very clear that most people, again, for lots of reasons, I'm not saying this because they're bad people or anything, but they haven't thought deeply about whether or not they should be creating people. And it's such a huge thing to have. It would require some pretty solid justification, and I just haven't come across it for the past 4 years since I first came across antinatalism, you know.
True, because let's also look at it this way. Like, if you were a scientist and you wanted to create a conscious being, like you were capable of creating a conscious being, you would need a good reason. You wouldn't just be like, let me just create this conscious being. For what? You'd need a very good reason to do that.
Yeah.
But people are just, you know, because they can procreate, they just procreate, you know what I mean? it really doesn't make sense. There must be a good reason. And, you know, it must not be a selfish reason. Because, yes, you can have a reason, but it can still be a very selfish reason. You can say, okay, I'm creating this conscious being so that I will enslave it. Or I'm creating this conscious being so that it will go and kill people, you know. I'm gonna use this conscious being as a weapon, blah, blah, blah. So you know, it still has to be a good reason. But people don't have a reason. That's what's crazy. They don't even have a reason. They just feel like, they just feel alone, and they just think, you know, maybe if I had a child, you know. And another thing that I've realized is that most children weren't planned, at least here in South Africa. It's not like people sit down and actually plan, because there ain't that many people that are married, you know. It's just, you know, young people trying to have fun, and it accidentally happens. And because they are religious, they just tell themselves that, hey, I can't abort, because, you know, I'll be sinning, you know. What if God doesn't give me another child because of aborted? You know, what if I start suffering from depression because I aborted, you know? But there are very few people who actually plan to have children. But even those who plan to have children, they don't really have good reasons. They just, you know, they just feel empty. You just think that having children is going to, like, change their lives and make them feel better, because they'll be feeling a void, you know? Now, there's this void that we all feel. So we kind of think that if we have a child, you know, a child is going to fill that void. It's like our biggest purpose is to actually reproduce.
Yes. Oh, I can definitely relate to that. That's definitely how, when I, you know, when I look around me at people I know who are having children, and just in general, I think that feeling of emptiness, of missing something that people, and it's totally understandable. Like, I've definitely felt those kind of feelings in the past, but I don't think it's a good idea to try and fill that void by creating somebody else, because then they might fill that void, you know.
Yeah.
So the David Benatar and his procreational Ponzi scheme, where people come into the world, and the only way that they can give their lives meaning is to bring more people into the world, and then the only way that they can give their own life meaning is to bring more people into the world.
Yeah,
the procreational Ponzi scheme. I think I agree with that concept more and more as time goes on.
Yeah. I saw a video of you and Lawrence interviewing people in the street about antinatalism, and I liked your approach. You know, I felt like you didn't come across as this angry person, you know, who hates life. No, you're trying to understand where they are coming from, and you know, trying to make them understand where you're coming from. So I think it's really important that as antinatalists, if we're going to talk to people about antinatalism, you know, we must approach them in a way that, you know, it's gonna make them feel comfortable. We shouldn't push them away, you know.
No, definitely. And I really comes from my belief that people aren't bad people for having children. I don't think they're bad people for eating animals, even though they are causing harm. I don't think that makes them quote-unquote bad people. And so I don't think it's a good way to approach people and tell them they are bad people. And because a lot of the time, as we're keep talking about the social conditioning, people haven't heard the alternative perspective and haven't thought this through. So if you take a compassionate approach, they're more likely to listen. Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt.
No, I remember how I was before I discovered veganism. You know, it's not like I was just like this evil person wanting to harm animals. I was just not conscious enough to understand veganism. I needed someone to, you know, persuade me. You know. Because I don't,
so you didn't want to go around hurting animals. Then is what you're saying. You didn't have all of these evil intentions towards animals.
True, I didn't, but I never questioned whether doing that is right or wrong. You know,
yes.
I mean, yeah, of course, it was easy for me to see that, okay, killing a dog is wrong, but I never really questioned whether killing a chicken was wrong.
Yes.
You know, I never, like, really questioned that. It was just something that, you know, it's happening, but you never really think about it at all because everyone is doing it, you know? But because killing dogs is not normal, you when you see a person killing a dog, you're like, no, what's going on? But killing chickens was normal. So we never really, like, questioned that growing up. So, you know, seeing someone, just like you're saying, you know, like someone bringing an alternative view, you kind of like, you know, it kind of persuades you to kind of think, you know, and try to, you know, understand where they're coming from. Yeah.
And that's what I was going to ask, actually, is how do people react to your antinatalist views when you do decide to share them with them?
What's funny is that I've actually, last year, I never had, like, I've spoken to a lot of people about antinatalism, but there's never been a person who disagreed with me. You know, in the beginning, people will disagree with me, but these days they don't. I've always wondered why. You know, because in the beginning, they'll just say, oh, well, now you're going to change your mind. No, just make some money. You're going to change your mind. You know, my parents would say that. Like, because, you know, when I was young, my parents would always tell me that, yeah, don't make sure that you don't have a kid because you can see that you're still broke. So when I say that I'm not going to have kids for philosophical reasons, my parents were okay with that. Why? Because they were like, okay, you still don't have money, so it's fine. You know, but they felt like I was going to change my mind when I started making money. They didn't really understand that. No, this, like, I had really good reasons to become an internatalist. But yeah, I would talk to my friends and they'll just think, ah, you're going to change your mind. You're going to change your mind. Talk to, you know, when a girl has a crush on me, I would tell her that I don't want kids. And her friends would be like, you see, I was telling you that you shouldn't, like this guy, you know, you see what he's saying. So you don't want to have kids. But since last year, when I talk to people about antinatalism, they seem to understand, you know. But I think, you know what, I think the more we learn how to talk to people, like, the more they get to listen, you know.
Yeah.
Like, you gotta have a good approach. But in the beginning, I didn't really have a good approach. But, you know, the more I make videos and learn to talk about antinatalism, the easier it is for me to talk to other people about antinatalism in a way that they can understand it. So I think that is why many people agreed with me, you know.
Definitely.
Like last year. Yeah.
And it's so interesting because you're talking about, like, running around telling everyone at the beginning. Like, I definitely did the same when I was first vegan. And you quickly figure out that often isn't the best approach, you know. And over time, you find out what people respond to, what they react well to, and also what comes better from you. Like, there are some people who can take a more kind of assertive, aggressive approach and be very compelling. I think Gary Yourofsky is a great example of that. When,
yeah,
you know, he's there, it's, and he's
that,
like,
that guy was something else.
Exactly, like, that really works for him. It doesn't really work for me. I tend to find that I reach people more with a very calm, very considered, quite assertive in terms of, like, asking people questions. But I'm not really telling people. I'm more asking them questions and trying to get them to figure it out for themselves, rather than giving them, like, the hard truth. If that makes sense.
Yeah, true. And it's fun, man. Like, that's why I think you guys should do that more. And I think
we're actually doing it this afternoon. I'm actually heading out to speak to some people this afternoon about it.
That'll be great. I can't wait for the video, man. No, it's beautiful. It's really beautiful, man. Like, watching you guys talk. Like, I remember I watched you. It was you and Lawrence in this other video. And I loved it. I was like, yeah, man, this is the best way to, like, approach people and talk to them about antinatalism, you know. We shouldn't scare them, you know, because, hey, it's easy to judge a person who's saying that, you know, having children is, like, it's very easy. So the approach has to be, you know, close to perfect, at least, so that, you know, people will get, you know, will get to think about it in the end. You mustn't, like, put people in defense mode, you know?
Definitely. And we'll talk about antinatalist activism in a little bit. But before we get there, I just wanted to ask, which arguments for antinatalism or against having children, whichever way you want to phrase it, Which arguments do you believe are the strongest?
Against antinatalism.
For antinatalism.
For antinatalism. My favorite argument for antinatalism is that we have no clue what is going on. We just here, and you know, it's like we're just zombies, you know, wandering through life. We have no clue what is going on. So what makes us so sure that we must bring more people here? Remember, there are many people that are here that are already suffering and that are already saying they don't like being here. So what made us decide that no, actually this world is good, since we don't even understand what is going on? Because it's crazy that we have no clue what is going on. That, like, this sometimes when I say this, it feels like a joke, but it's true. We are alive and we don't know what is going on. You know, it's possible that we could be living in a cosmic prison. That's really possible. It is possible that we could be in a simulation, you know what I mean? Like, this world could really be anything. It could be hell. We don't know. So unless we at least try to find this experience, to try to make this experience good for every person that is here, I don't think we should be procreating, because we don't even know what this place is. So that's my favorite argument for antinatalism. We don't know what is going on. But also the consent argument. But I don't like to bring it up a lot, because I don't know. It's for a person who doesn't understand it at all. It just won't really work. But the way that I'll put it is like, yo, man, like, I'll just put it in the middle of a sentence. You know, I'll be like, yeah, you know, like, there are a lot of things that are going on here, and you must also remember that, you know, nobody asked for this. You know, no one consented to this. But I don't use it as the main argument. I just bring it. Yeah, exactly. So, that's. Yeah, those are my arguments for antinatalism.
And it's so interesting, because it really depends. When I say what are the best, it really depends on what situation you're in. Like, I personally find the not necessarily Benatar's version of the asymmetry, but an asymmetry between pleasure and pain, those kind of arguments, very compelling. So the idea that we should value suffering and harm more than we value, you know, pleasure or well-being. But those can get quite technical and philosophical, and most people just, oh, we haven't thought about that. You know, like, what are you talking about? You can explain it to people. Like, don't get me wrong, it can be explained to people. But if you're talking with someone and you haven't got much time, I don't really want to sit them down and talk about philosophical asymmetries and all this kind of thing. I think,
yeah, unless you're talking to someone like the vegan skeptic, those kind of guys. But
yes,
a regular person.
If you've
person,
got a lot of time and they're interested in philosophy, then you can definitely go there. But if you're you know, if someone's saying, like, what's this antinatalism thing? They're completely new to it. You don't think that they think much about philosophy and this kind of thing. I'm not going to go to the asymmetry. I think the points that you're making around, like, the consent argument is maybe a bit more philosophical, but I do think it can be helpful to bring it up. But really, those kind of risk arguments that you're talking about, like, we don't know what's going on. There's already all this suffering. You know, why would you bring someone into this when it can go so badly wrong? That seems to really resonate with people, you know.
Yeah.
Or pointing out the suffering that's around them.
Because what can you say against that? You know, it's like, if someone came to me, even if I was not an internationalist, and they said that, I don't know what I would say, because it's true. You know, it's so true. Like, it doesn't really give anyone an opportunity to, you know, like, disagree. It's like, you can't disagree with what is being said. It's the truth, and it's obvious that it is the truth, you know?
I find that the response I typically get, because people often agree in an individual sense. So if I'm like, look, there's already all this harm out there. You're taking a risk by having a child, and you could also be, instead of having a child, you could also be helping, you know, stop all the harm that already exists. I think people get that. What they will often then go to, in my experience, is to say, well, what about, well, if everyone agreed with you, then humanity would go extinct.
Yeah.
What's your response to that argument? If people say, well, what if everyone agrees with you, then human race dies out.
I would ask them, what do you think is best? Do you think that it is best that, okay, we procreate mindlessly, right? Procreate, and people suffer, or we reproduce less? You know, let's not talk about extinction now, because right now, the main problem is that people are suffering, and we are bringing more people into a world that is already messed up, and that has many people, and that's one of the biggest reasons why they're suffering. So let's ask ourselves, what is best to do in this situation that we are in? Is it best for us to reproduce more or to reproduce less? You see, that's what I'll say. And the reason why I will not say, well, it's actually best for humanity to stop existing, the reason why I will not tell them that is because I don't feel a lot of people can really understand this. So sometimes it's good to just, you know, I don't know, like, take it one step at a time. Just like when you're approaching a woman, you don't just say, yeah, I want to sleep with you, you know, like, you know, you take it one step at a time until it gets there. You know, you don't approach a woman and say, I want to marry you and all that. So yeah, you take it one step at a time. That is it not best?
I like the analogy of dating, how you don't need to go in all guns blazing from the beginning and be like, we're going to marry each other. Mm. We're going to sleep together. It's going to be great. Like, you might be a bit more tactful than that.
Yeah, true. Because people already, you know, they already have their beliefs, you know, and you have to understand that we are hardwired for survival. So the moment you say, hey, yeah, actually, you know, humanity should cease to exist. No, they'll look at you as the enemy, you know, especially if you're talking to a Christian. Like, well, what, you know what I mean? But if you say, hey, I just think it'll actually be best for people to stop procreating now until we figure out how to make this world work, you know, because the world is not working. There are a lot of people who are really depressed, a lot of people who are unemployed, a lot of people don't know what they're doing with their lives. And that one of the biggest reasons is that there is too many people, you know. We don't know what to do with many people that are here. It sucks that people have to wake up in the morning and don't know what to do. It sucks that there's more people than there's employment. You know, in South Africa, more than 60% of young people are unemployed. That sucks. Yeah. And they, not because they're lazy. No, everyone wants to be employed, but you know, there is no employment for real. So should we make more people, what do we think is going to happen in the future? You know, we're going to start eating each other. You know, that's one of the biggest reasons why there's crime in our country. You know, people are broke. They don't know what to do. So they do whatever they can to survive, because we are hardwired for survival. That's the thing.
And that's such an interesting and important way of framing it, is to say that, you know, especially in like competition for resources, and in particular, like in where there is scarcity, then bringing more, you know, more mouths to feed when not everyone is being fed currently.
Yeah,
I think those kind of arguments can really resonate with people. And I was actually going to ask you, which arguments do you think are least strong for antinatalism? So these are arguments that antinatalists have made for antinatalism that you're less in favor of, either because it's less personally convincing for you or less effective when you're talking to someone.
I don't know. I do ask myself most of the time, like, is there an argument for antinatalism that isn't really strong? Or sometimes we might not know how to frame that argument, you know. It's like sometimes you might find that the argument, that your argument is weak because you're not framing it right. Because here's the thing, it's true that there are a lot of people who are suffering in the world who did not consent to being born. It is true that there are a lot of people who are not happy with being here, and you know, it's like what could be, like, what argument is weak, you know, like when you're trying to, like, you know, you know, like you're trying to talk to people about antinatalism, like it's not, I cannot really think of a really weak argument for antinatalism. But like, can you think of one argument that you feel like, you know,
I guess for me personally, I think the argument for human extinction because humans are ruining the beautiful planet, that for me is an argument that I don't like. And that's often an argument from environmentalists who say that if there were no more humans, then there would be a thriving ecosystem and it would all be beautiful. And I'm there thinking, have you seen what happens in nature? The way that animals starve, the way that animals eat each other alive, the way that animals, even the way they impregnate each other, like the reproduction that goes on in nature is truly horrific, you know? So those kind of arguments I find less personally convincing. Although there are, you know, there is a section of the population who does think of humanity as a kind of virus that's stopping the beauty of nature from realizing its full potential. What do you think about those kind of arguments?
Although I don't use this kind of arguments, but I do kind of feel like we are like a virus, you know, in this planet. And
in the sense of taking everything over.
It's like we don't belong here. Sorry?
In the sense of like taking everything over.
Yeah, everywhere we go, we want to like dominate. We want to change things. You know, we want to change the natural order of things. It's like we don't really belong here when you think about it. Like the way that Agent Smith puts it in The Matrix, that we're like a virus. Like other organisms find a way to thrive in their environment.
When you said about virus, it really did make me think of Agent Smith straight away. He gives that speech to Morpheus, if you remember. And he's like, you're a virus.
Yeah, true. But yeah, you're right when you say, yeah, what happens to nature is really messed up. Like the way these animals be killing each other, it's really brutal, you know. So yeah, that's one of the reasons why I don't like using this kind of argument. But it's true. It's like we don't belong here. The things that we're doing, you know, we're messing with the natural order of things. But I don't want to use that argument because I don't know. I'll come across as a misanthrope. You know, like I just hate humanity. You know, like I don't want to give people, like I don't want like people that I'll be talking to have something to say that's negative. You know, so I try to just speak to their hearts. You know, about what we are going through as people. That's how I like to put it.
And that's also such an important point about like the compassionate point and speaking to people's hearts, you know, and not coming across as some angry misanthrope. But sorry, you were saying?
Oh, yeah, I was saying, and also, you know, some internationalists might say that, okay, we're destroying the environment and, you know, what's going to happen is that maybe there's going to be global warming, you know. I kind of feel like it kind of defeats defeats the papers. Like if you're saying that you're an internationalist and you think that, you know, humanity should stop existing, why should we have a problem that we're gonna cause global warming, blah blah blah, you know. So, but I don't like going there at all. I don't like going there. I've made many videos and I don't remember I've ever like really spoken about us, you know, destroying the environment.
Yes,
maybe once or twice, but nah, it's like I never really talk about that.
Yeah, and I definitely, just in terms of like how I view humanity, I don't view humanity as a virus, because I think virus makes it sound like humanity is all bad and always will be bad. Like there's not like I don't know, is there like a happy, like a positive virus that infects someone and makes someone better? I don't really know, but you know, it makes it sound like all bad. And I think that humanity can and is capable of doing good. Obviously, we do a lot of harm at the moment. And that's, you know, a lot of vegans understandably have a very poor perception of humanity because of all the suffering and death that goes on in animal agriculture. But for me, I kind of view humanity in general a bit like if you've ever had a friend who's got lots of potential. Like you think that they've got tons of like potential, that they could do lots of good, but they keep messing up and you get frustrated with them because you're like, oh, you could do so much better than this. And yet you keep whatever it is, you know, we all have our personal flaws, but it's it's frustrating when you see someone who has so much potential not live up to their potential. And that's generally how I view humanity. Like, we could stop the suffering. We could, like, at the moment we inflict a lot of suffering, but we could, you know, we could stop harming each other. We could, there's nothing that says that we can't stop harming others, stop harming ourselves, and stop the harm, like the harm in nature that isn't our fault. Like, we don't cause the harm in nature, but we could do something about it. And that's the frustration I have. I feel like we as humanity are not living up to our potential. And then when I think of humanity, like, in a sense, it, like, externally, like, how do I view humanity as a whole? I feel like the friend who sees, or the person who sees their friend with all the potential who's not living up to it. What are your thoughts on that?
I agree with you, but not completely. So let me put it this way. You know, there was a time when I was not a vegan. There was a time when I was, like, causing a lot of harm, but now I grew, right? So you can say, yeah, I'm kind of, you know, I've changed for the better, right?
Yes.
But what about people that do not change no matter what? Is it not possible that some humans are just more conscious than others, and we can never be all conscious at the same time? It's like, that doesn't happen. There will be, just like in a classroom, not all the students are going to be smart. So yes, it's like some people are able to reach their full potential, but some can't. That's the problem. It's like some cannot become that conscious. So even if we preached to the whole world, not everyone will change. Some few people will be like, hey, yeah, but this does make sense. But what about those who cannot change? You see, that's the thing. That's why I feel like we can't solve the world, because few people can change, but then not everyone is going to change.
That's true.
So I was just saying that this is my only problem, you know. But I do get what you're saying.
I guess my view of it would be that while there are people who won't, like, it's really interesting if you look at what changes people's behavior and what causes people to be, you know, to act ethically, it's not really clear. And it gets into, you know, philosophical questions about free will. But it does just seem to be the case that there are some people who are more willing to make sacrifices to be ethical, whether that's, again, not having children or going vegan, than others. And, you know, it's about going against the trend. There are some people who are more likely to, or more willing to, go against the trend than others. But what I do think is that while there aren't that many people who will go against the trend, I don't, as you're saying about yourself before you were vegan, same would apply to me. There aren't that many people who have genuinely bad intentions, who sit there and think, I know that what I'm doing is wrong, but I'm just going to do it anyway because I want to do wrong in the world. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
I feel like with something like veganism, once we change the food system will change, and it will take a lot of effort to get it to change, whether that's lab-grown meat or whatever it might be, alternative proteins. And I don't think there'll be that many people who will say, no, I want to continue killing the animals and all the suffering that causes. There won't be that many. I think after a while, like, I can see humanity shift away from that. And there might not be that many people leading the change, but once it becomes the norm, they're not going to actively push to bring back the old ways of harming animals. Sure. Does that make sense?
No, that's 100% true. Because we live the way that we live today because of how we've been conditioned. So, of course, if we change the norm and new people grow up adopting the norm, then, of course, we're going to, like, the world is going to change. But are people willing to sacrifice themselves for a greater change, for a greater good? And here's what I mean. Let's talk about companies that are making a lot of money right now because of meat production. Are they willing to give that up? Like, no, actually, you know what? Let's stop all this nonsense, you know, because we know beyond any reasonable doubt that these animals are suffering. These animals are kept in cages because of us. They don't get to live the way that they need to live because of us. Like, are people like that, or we are inherently selfish? Because it seems to me that we are inherently selfish. So unless someone very powerful or some aliens that are more powerful than we are came and decided to save the animals and change things, I don't think we'll change by ourselves. There's the problem.
But the good thing about those companies, though, is they, yes, they might be selfish, but we do know what they care about. And what they care about is money. They don't care about harming animals. Like, they're not sadistic in the sense of, we just love all the killing of animals that goes on. We just love all the suffering. You know what I mean? So if we can shift where the, you know, where the profit incentive takes people, if the profits go towards the alternative, then I think the big companies in particular will come with, because they don't have any intrinsic kind of desire to harm animals.
That's 100% true.
And this is actually
like I was saying, that I 100% agree with you. And if we can find a way to, you know, I don't know, make people want to eat vegan food, you know, make vegan food, you know, more enjoyable, maybe. But here's what I wanted to say. Don't you feel like, as humans, the reason why the world is the way that it is today, even though we don't want to cause harm, but the reason why the world is the way it is today is because we're looking out for ourselves. And as long as we keep looking out for ourselves, we can never have a good world. Because even if, let's just say, everyone becomes vegan, right? Won't there be other ways that will be causing suffering because of our selfishness?
Yes.
It seems like the real problem is how we are, you know, like we look out for ourselves. We don't really care about it. Because if we did care about others, we will change this in a day. We'll be like, okay, these sentient beings are suffering because of us. So let's stop. We do understand that we want to make money, but let's stop. We cannot do this.
I wonder if we can, a bit like the company example, where we're not appealing for them to care about animals. We're just trying to get their selfishness to point towards, like, to follow the money towards the vegan food. I do think that humans can potentially be won over by saying, you know, by pointing the selfish, like the behavior that benefits them towards the right thing. If that makes sense. Like, for example,
that's brilliant.
Like, slavery 200 years ago, abolished in the UK roughly 200 years ago. And before then, Britain was one of the leading slaver countries, you know, made a huge amount of money from the transatlantic slave trade. But if I walked down the street now saying, bring back the slave trade, I would probably be beaten up and arrested. Like, it's not in my interest to do that. Even if I genuinely believed that bringing back the slave trade would be a good thing, because the human, like, our behavior has shifted towards the right thing to the point where it's not in my interest to go against it. And similarly, maybe in a few hundred years time, when everyone's eating the vegan food, you know, we don't have animal agriculture. If someone's like, no, I want to go and kill animals, people might react in the same way. Like, why would you say something so horrible and cruel, and then it wouldn't be in my interest to do that, you know?
No, that's my hope. I think you're very right. You're very right. You know, when you say we should just point our selfishness to something that is bad, we are inherently selfish. So let's point our selfishness to something that's gonna at least help us. No, you're very right.
I was going to say, that does tie into my next question about the best counter arguments to antinatalism. Because, for example, I don't think that we can convince everyone to become an antinatalist.
Yeah, we can't.
What are your thoughts on that?
No, we can't. No matter what happens, I don't think we can. Like, the world can burn and people will still reproduce. I would say the best counter argument You remember what you're saying now, that maybe if we can, you know, try to shift our selfishness towards something that is, you know, more productive, something that's going to help us as a collective. So someone can use that kind of argument that, you know, maybe it is possible at some point that we find a way to make this world work, even though we're selfish. But I don't think that it will still be like it will be like it's the best, but I don't think it's the strongest, because like I still feel like I can, you know, I can find flaws in this kind of like argument. You know, it's just the thing is we haven't done so good as a collective for me to be convinced that we can change. Like yeah, in theory it works. Like yeah, we can do this, we can do that, you know what I mean? But it seems like every system that we introduce that is meant to make things better become our new prison. It's like we do have ideas, you know, like, oh, communism is going to work, or capitalism is going to work. But
yes,
we fuck things up in the end. There's the problem. Education is going to work, but then you find that the education system is flawed, you know? People should have jobs and productive members of society, and you find that people are now enslaved. Like there is no equality. People are not being paid what they're worth. You know, it's like every system is there's corruption everywhere. That's the thing. So yeah, you know, a person who's not an internationalist, you know, can say that, you know, we're gonna change in the future. Look at where we come from. We used to kill each other. You get killed for no reason, you know, but now that's kind of changing, you know. Now we have like justice system, blah 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 blah, but it's like the way that I'll put it is that it's like we always enter a new form of slavery let me put it that way. Like whenever we shift from, whenever we try to solve problems, we enter like a new form of that problem. Let me put it that way. So we never really change things. We just enter a new form where, you know, and if you realize that whenever we change, let's just say as a collective we try to change something that was bad, it will seem like we've won until after some few years when we realize that no, actually nothing really changed, you know. So that seems like that's how it works. Like we always have people who are hopeful, so we work towards changing things, but then after changing things the problem will still find another way to manifest. But it seems like these problems that we have are not bugs. It's like they're features that they're part of this world, you know.
I definitely do agree. Like it can be tempting to think of change being inevitable, or that everything goes in the right direction without really trying. And I really, really disagree with all of that. I think that change, moral progress, is difficult. It needs a lot of attention. It can be easy to go wrong. It can be easy to lose the progress that you've made. And that's something that I think is really important for anyone doing any kind of activism, whether it's antinatalist activism, vegan activism, it doesn't really matter what it is, any kind of cause, that I don't think we should rest on our laurels, because as you said, we can think we've achieved something and then we either lose progress on it or another problem can present itself. To bring it back to antinatalism, I do worry that sometimes antinatalists have this approach towards activism. They say things like, the problem is human procreation, and once we've just solved that, then everything else will sort it. Then, you know, it's like everything else will sort itself out. It's, you know, it's like the big thing to achieve. And I just, again, to go back to my point about like the wild animal suffering, and one, whether or not we can even achieve. Again, I'm very skeptical that we are going to be able to peacefully convince people to not have children. And I don't like the idea of forcing people not to have children at all. Mm-hmm. It's, I'm very skeptical with antinatalist activism that sets out with voluntary human extinction as the end goal. Because I don't think it would be achievable. And even if we somehow did achieve it, there would still be a huge problem of suffering in this world. So what do you think about antinatalist activism in general, especially with respect to like the opportunities and challenges for antinatalist activism?
You know, I like what the Stop Having Kids organization does, especially when that like they go out there and talk to people, because they also like try to, you know, bring solutions to problems that we have. Like, hey, you know, we must focus on people who are already here. We must focus on making change for people who are already here. Let's not bring more people here, even if we know that we cannot, you know, make the world better for the people that are already here. So I think that's how, you know, when people go out there, they should actually like approach people like, yo, there's this problem. The problem is that we're bringing people into this world that we don't know, you know, what it is. And we see that there are a lot of people who are suffering. So what if we just focused on the people that are already here? What if we just focused on people that don't have homes, like children who don't have homes? Why don't we, you know, try to find the way to find parents for these children? You know, let's make adoption a norm. Like, let's make that normal. You know, people must know that there's nothing wrong with adopting, because, you know, people are programmed to think that they must just make copies of themselves. Like, no, we are one. We're all made of the same things. You didn't create your own DNA, so you mustn't have a problem adopting, you know?
Yeah.
That person is going to be your child. It's, you know, you mustn't be too egotistical. So I think that's the approach that we must try to use. We must also be trying to solve the problems. Let's not just focus on antinatalism only, especially when, you know, we go out there.
I think that's just really important, as you said, like about focusing on solving the problems, not having that total view on procreation, but also the approach of thinking about the opportunity cost of having children. It's obviously a huge part of what we talk about antinatalist advocacy. The idea that if we do put all our effort into, you know, as a lot of people do, they put their effort into having children, raising their own children, etc., we are missing out on supporting those who already do exist and already are in need. As I said before, we're creating more mouths to feed by bringing them into existence. We've talked a lot about how to approach people in terms of conversation and bringing these ideas to them. With antinatalist advocacy, we tend to focus less on that kind of direct outreach approach and more towards, you know, donating to charity and especially with like charity and also like working if you have the opportunity to work on a specific problem as well. Obviously, this depends massively. Your capability to have impact really depends on your personal circumstances, often where you live in the world, the kind of resources that you have available, this kind of thing. So where do you think, for example, there are particularly promising opportunities for antinatalism to have an impact in like a broad sense, as well as convincing people to, or like, you know, bringing antinatalist ideas to people in a way that might be quite persuasive?
So just like we're talking about adoption, I think, I don't know if this is legal, but I think, I don't know, it would be good to go to places where there are children who are not adopted, you know what I mean? Maybe play with them, blah, 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 you know what I mean? Like making videos, finding a way to kind of like encourage parents to adopt children, you know, but in a way that's going to be good, not in a way that's, you know what I mean? Not like we're selling these children, you know?
Yes.
So yeah, there's the thing. But yeah, like making adoption important, like a norm in our society.
Yes, a lot the cultural norm of adoption, making that a more accepted kind of thing to do.
Exactly, because where I live, I don't know anyone who has been adopted, like who has adopted. Like, it doesn't happen. Yeah. You know, people don't ever think about adoption, and there are lots of people who cannot have children, who are stressing every day about having children, but they never think of adopting. You know, it's like, yes, it's no one talks about it, so then they don't. It doesn't even, you know, cross their minds. That's the thing. So yeah, I think that's where the opportunity is. Let's focus on the existing life. Let's make sure that there are no children that are orphans, you know? So yeah, I think that's where the opportunity is.
I totally agree. And I was just thinking, as you're saying about not knowing anyone who's adopted, I think I know fewer people who are adopted than I know people who wanted to have children and couldn't.
So that's strange.
It's strange. Like, it's like, again, and it's not the fault of those people, don't get me wrong. It's because there isn't that social norm around adoption as this being an opportunity. You don't need to spend all of your money on IVF or whatever it may be to try and create new beings when there are already people out there who want to, you know, who don't have homes to grow up in, who don't have families to love them. But it's strange. It's just not the done thing. And the way that you framed it there about, like, so I talk about, obviously, you know, with antinatalism, I talk about adoption quite a lot. But you saying that you don't know anyone who's adopted made me reflect on just how rare it actually is.
Yeah, it's very rare. It's very rare. It's very rare because I even only lived in rural areas. You know, I've been to Joburg. I've known a lot of people in my life, and I genuinely don't know anyone who's been adopted. Yeah, there've been people who have lived with families, but they weren't like adopted. You know, they weren't adopted. You know, it's just like, you know, let's just say, your relatives, like one of, like let's just say your relatives die and they have a child.
Yes.
Like maybe your sister or whatever. But that's
yes, the no, form I definitely of know that people raised by like aunts and uncles or by grandparents, yeah, exactly, or something. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what happens here. But people never really adopt orphans. And I've seen orphans. I remember when I was working at the Department of Agriculture, we did actually donate to this at our orphanage. So there are orphans everywhere in South Africa.
Yeah.
But you know, people are not willing to adopt. And I find it, I don't know if you've noticed this, right? it's usually people with money that cannot have children. Have you noticed this? Or it's just like this where I live. Because you find that there are people with money, but they can't have children, and they're not even like adopting.
Interesting. I don't really there's a point of like, do they have money because they aren't having children? Like, if you have children young and your children are expensive, then you're not going to have money. But then, I do know people who've spent, obviously, you know, thousands and thousands of pounds on trying to get pregnant, on fertility treatments.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
I've seen that a lot where I live. And it's really scary. You find that Christians, you know, they'll be going crazy, you know, even going to sangomas, like traditional doctors, you know, that goes against their religion because they want to have children. And you find that they have enough money to actually, you know, like adopt. Because I think before you adopt, they'll have to see where you live, you know, all that. And because that's important, you know, because like when it comes to having children, anyone can just have children. But when it comes to adopting, they have to check your background.
Yes.
We must also ask ourselves why. Why do they have to check your background? They have to check if you are not a psycho, if you have never been convicted of rape before. But anyone can have children, you know. It doesn't.
Yes.
It doesn't
that,
make
that
sense.
That part to me is, and I don't know any way of dealing with that particular issue. But it's true. Like, I'm very glad that people are very careful about adopting. They don't want their children to go into the wrong family. As you said, you could be living with an abuser or something like that. They really try and make sure that these children are adopted into good homes. but anyone can have a kid. I could be the most violent nutcase in the world, and no one's going to stop me having a kid. There's something strange about that. Again, I don't know. I'm not advocating for any position on that. I'm not saying that people should apply for a permit to be able to procreate or anything like this. But it is an interesting double standard that I just I don't know what to do about it. Like how difficult it is to adopt, and how you really have to prove that you're for want of a better word, a good person before you can adopt. Yet anyone can just, you know, have a bit of fun and then impregnate someone.
And we don't have a problem with that. Yes, it is natural, but I think as we grow as a society, we need to have this kind of conversations. Of course, it's gonna seem like people who are bringing that up are evil. Like, oh, now they want to control who gets to have children now. You know what I mean? That's how people in the woke communities will like look at it. Like, oh, they want to control who gets to have children. But that's why it's difficult. So I understand when you're saying that it's difficult, because like, well, what do you do? What do you say to people?
And I think that's something I've got down here as a question about challenges facing antinatalist activists. I think this is something that antinatalists really do need to be careful of, and that is how they come across to people who are not antinatalists. Because I see discussions all the time between antinatalists like, would it be ethical to blow the world up? Like, should we force people to have a permit before they can have children? Should we forcibly sterilize people? And don't get me wrong, these are interesting questions philosophically. But I think we really need to be careful about when we're talking philosophically and when we're talking about practical solutions, because people think that we're trying to get hold of, you know, and I worry about it too. Like, you know, with this podcast and that, I try to say constantly about when I'm talking about what to do practically and what we're talking about philosophically, because it's easy for people to get the wrong end of the stick and think that I personally am trying to create the red button that blows up the world, you know, which I'm definitely not. Yeah. And again, I don't even think it would be good to press it philosophically. Like, I don't think morally it would be good to press the red button. But it can scare people. It can really, really scare people. And I think that's something that antinatalists need to be really careful about, is that for all the things we talked about earlier, for the, you know, the social conditioning and people not being familiar with these ideas, they need to bear in mind how they come across to, for want of a better word, normies or non-antinatalists. Because, it's easy to come across very badly.
And, you know, what I've noticed, there's another video that I've reacted to. I think Lawrence also reacted to that video of this. I don't know if I forgot his name. Is this popular YouTuber? You know, when people attack antinatalism, they don't like attack the points that we're making, you know? Like, they'll try to attack what we're against as well. Like blowing the earth, you know what I mean? Like stuff like that. They'll try to attack like the radical, you know, antinatalist stake views. That's what they'll be trying to attack. They're not going to attack, you know, what we were saying. You know, they don't attack the rational side of antinatalism. They want to attack the rational side of antinatalism so that they'll make it look bad, because it already does seem bad.
See, I think often they'll take the theoretical discussion as a policy prescription. They'll say things like, you know, I think it's an interesting philosophical discussion whether or not blowing up the world, if you had the red button, would be a good idea. I can see the logic in pressing it. I'm firmly against pressing it. But I can see the rational arguments that people might have for doing it if you could end suffering forever. But someone can take that statement and be like, well, therefore, this person here wants to do that. They're a danger that they're going to... And I can understand why they do that. I don't think it's particularly, you know, to take an earnest philosophical discussion and therefore say that this is like a policy prescription, this is what they're actually trying to do, I don't think it's particularly fair. But it's easy to do with antinatalists, because those kind of discussions happen all the time. Like, you can find video of it happening.
Yeah, it's like if you watch the Avengers War, Infinity Wars, is it Infinity Wars with Thanos?
With Thanos, yes. Thanos gets brought up all the time. We are quite often compared to Thanos.
Yeah, because the thing is, you can see where he's coming from, right? Like, the problem is that he wants to end half of all life, but you understand his intention. But the problem is what he's trying to do in the end. Is very radical, but you understand that he has a good heart. He has the best intentions. He wants to create balance in the world, and he want to do something that's very radical to create balance. And people can say, "Well, he's evil because of what he's trying to do." It's like that to him, the ends justify the means, right?
Yes.
So that's the thing. So people can attack him for what he's trying to do in the end, not his intentions. Like, why does he want to do what he wants to do?
Yes.
So there's the thing.
And that kind of ends justify the means thinking, it's very, very dangerous, and it's led some pretty bad things happen throughout history. I mean, we talked about communism earlier, you know, all of the revolutions that killed so many people. It's very rare to find someone who thinks that they're doing bad, even when they're doing, you know, tremendously harmful things that other people would think of as acts of evil. So just for antinatalists to bear that in mind, you know, think about that next time that you're calling for the red, you know, for us to create the red button or whatever it may be. Just be aware that many people in the past have used this ends justify the means thinking. So just be wary of that. But there was something that you touched on that I really, really liked when I was asking about like opportunities for antinatalists to have an impact. And you talked about the, you know, like the norms around adopting. And I think that's something that can often get overlooked. It's like with antinatalists, we can spend so much time thinking about the philosophy. And it is important to think about the philosophy. I mean, this podcast is all about philosophy. But sometimes I worry that antinatalists think so much in the abstract, they don't see the good things that they can do in their own lives that don't necessarily require a huge amount of effort, but can be really impactful. The most obvious examples for us are, you know, going vegan. Like, that's something that a lot of people can do. Obviously, not having children of your own. If you are in the position to do so and you would like to, you know, adopting, donating money, these kinds of things. And I worry that we sometimes lose sight of these actions because we spend so much time online debating the philosophy or debating whether or not something would be right or wrong. There's a phrase, and I'm not sure if this phrase has made its way down to South Africa, but missing the forest for the trees.
where we're
so focused that we actually miss the big picture. And I worry that antinatalists can do that. They can overlook the actions that they can take in their own lives because they're too much focused on the abstract. What are your thoughts on that?
No, it's true, because I do spend a lot of time asking myself, what am I doing, you know? Like, what am I really doing out there? Because, yeah, I talk about antinatalism, and yes, I do have plans, but what am I doing right now, you know? Because every action counts, you know? Every action has a ripple effect. If you want to do, like, if you want things to change for the better, try to do the right things, and that's going to create a ripple effect. You know, you're going to also impact people's lives in a positive way, you know, because the way we treat each other does count. If people treat you badly, chances are you're going to treat other people badly. That's what they say, hurt people hurt more people. So, yeah, it's important to at least, you know, be trying to do the right things, you know, helping people, donating. You know, I think that's, we should also focus on that. Like, we should have discussions on that. How can we make this, how can we at least make changes in our lives that are going to, you know, be helpful, even if they're not big changes?
And I think that's a really wonderful note to end on. Was there anything else that you'd like to say on this subject?
Nah, not much, man. I think we've covered a lot. One thing that I'll say is that, you know, people shouldn't I don't know, they shouldn't feel bad, you know, because the world does not understand them. They've never really been people who were like game changers in the past that were really understood. You know, if you are a true game changer, of course people are not gonna understand you. I mean, if you believe in what's written in the Bible, Jesus got crucified, but you know, he was more right than the people who crucified him. So that's how it works. If you go
and all of his followers, the disciples died horrible deaths after him as well.
Yeah, exactly. So
you shouldn't expect an easy ride if you're trying to do good.
Yeah, exactly. That's how it works. That's how it works. So that's all I can say for now.
Definitely, and I do think that is something that, you know, we shouldn't. I think you can be compassionate towards people and say, you know, and understand where they're coming from. Like, we should expect pushback. Of course we should. We are going against the norm. But the people who are pushing back against us, it doesn't make them terrible people. And I think by me having the approach of the people who push back against me not being terrible people, it actually makes the pushback less bad. Because you feel like less, I don't know, less of a victim in a sense. Because if you have the mindset of, oh, here's this horrible person who's saying horrible things about me because they're horrible, isn't this all horrible? Whereas if I have the mindset of, well, this is someone who, you know, they're concerned by what I'm saying, that they're, you know, they're criticizing me, whatever, but I think they're coming from a good place. I can understand where they're coming from. That makes me feel better. Like, it's less of an issue that the people are criticizing me, you know.
No, that's true. And you know, I actually believe that everyone acts from good intentions. I know this is racial, like, it's hard to believe that everyone acts from good intentions, but I think everyone acts from good intentions. The problem is that you can be misguided, you know. So we need to try to understand one another as people. So it's also important for me as an internationalist to understand why someone is a nativist, why someone would think that I'm wrong.
Yes. So that you need to have that empathy.
So that I won't be angry. Because again, imagine if you're talking to someone and trying to make them understand you, but you're angry. They're gonna sense that. So you're gonna end up fighting with them. That's why I try my best to never, like, whenever I'm debating with people, no one has ever seen me angry. I'll be smiling all the time. I don't care what you say. I'm just gonna try to make the most important point, so that you understand. Even if you don't agree with me at the time, you're going to agree with me later. There have been people that I've met later on in my life that I've debated with like 3 years ago who told me that, yo, man, you know, what you were saying makes sense. They didn't even forget. And you find that I forgot that I debated with them, but they tell me that they were saying that they made sense. So,
and if you shouted at them and called them a horrible person, then it's very unlikely that they would have come back and thought on that discussion in a positive way.
No, we need to show them that we're sane, we're strong. You know, we're not these depressed people that are trying to, like, you know, blow up the world. We're good. You know, we're just trying to show people something that they've never, like, really thought about.
Yeah, definitely. I was just going to say, we brought up potentially the music that you're going to release later this year. Is there anything else that you're working on that you'd like to like us to signpost people towards?
No, not really. The things that I'm working on, I'm not really, like, I'm going to, you know, announce them at some point, because I'm not really sure I'm going to do them, but yeah, I'm not releasing anything else.
Great. Well, we'll make sure to include all the links below. But lastly, from me, as I say on every podcast episode, we like to end with a positive note, because understandably, antinatalism and antinatalist people and spaces can come across very down, very depressing, very, you know, negative and inward looking. So always try and end on something positive and maybe a bit uplifting related to this topic. So is there anything positive about antinatalism that you'd like to share at the end?
No, what I've always liked about antinatalism, antinatalism in general, is that they are real, man. They're really honest, they're really open-minded. So, you know, in a world where not that many people are open-minded, you know, they can get attacked, you know, and they can feel alone because sometimes you don't have anyone that you can talk to that is very open-minded. So yeah, let's try to make our community strong, you know, try to, I don't know, create new communities, maybe on Telegram, WhatsApp, Instagram, you know, try to communicate more, try to be there for one another. You know, I always talk to people on Instagram, you know, because we need to feel more connected at the end of the day. You know, the way that we view the world is I don't know, not many people view the world the way that we view the world. So yeah, let's connect more. Let's try to understand one another more. Let's not, you know, start unnecessary fights. Sometimes you find people fighting in the comments. Like, you guys believe in the same thing, and you're supposed to be the most conscious, in my opinion, because I've always felt like internet is like the most conscious, because we've all been programmed to procreate, you know. So you being able to go against your programming, that's being conscious. You are questioning whether you were programmed to do the right thing. That's like if HIV became conscious enough to be like, let me stop killing the antibodies, you know what I mean? Like, what I'm doing is wrong. That takes the highest level of consciousness. So yeah, that's so I don't expect internet elites to be fighting over stupid things, you know. I expect people to understand one another in these communities.
That's true. I do think I worry that sometimes I can be too critical of the antinatalist community because of the infighting and the, you know, the spaces can be quite toxic and the lack of focus on actions that we can take and this kind of thing. But as you said, there are a lot of amazing people in the antinatalist community, truly compassionate people, people who've gone against, as you said, their social conditioning, their biological kind of programming, because they think what they're doing, you know, for ethical reasons. And I think there's just, yeah, some truly amazing people out there in the antinatalist community, wonderful, empathetic people. And yeah, if we can all be a bit kinder to each other, as you were saying, I think that's only going to benefit us as a community and benefit the positive impact that we can have on the world. So again, I just wanted to thank you again, Benedictines, for a wonderful conversation.
Thanks for having me, man. It was great. It was great talking to you, man.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of the Antinatalist Advocacy Podcast. If you like what you heard today, please subscribe so you don't miss future episodes. We'd also be really grateful if you could help us get the word out there by sharing this episode far and wide, as well as giving us a positive rating on whichever platform you're listening to us on. To find out more about AA, including careers advice, donation recommendations, and different ways to have a positive impact, you can go to our website at antinatalistadvocacy.org. To keep up to date with what we're up to, feel free to subscribe to our monthly newsletter and follow us on your favourite social media platforms. Links to all of the above are in the description. As always, we are hoping you will join us in our antinatalist advocacy.